You're listening to the FQXI podcast. You're encouraging us now to seize hold of life and appreciate it. So let's turn to the Physics of Life Initiative. Tom McLeish, a physicist at York University in the UK, spoke with reporter Colin Stewart about a new interdisciplinary initiative to potentially find new medicines and also to learn more about foundational aspects of physics, self-assembly and emergence, through biology.
Tom McLeish from the University of York runs the Physics of Life Network, bringing together physicists and biologists to work on common problems. And for UK researchers, there's funds available through grants. I started by asking him whether that kind of collaboration is something new.
Physics and biology, or broadly the physical sciences and the life sciences, have regularly made contact over the last 100 years. And whenever that happens, whole new vistas of science open up. A couple of examples: radio labeling was the physics of radioactivity and the biology of organisms in the 1920s. Immediately opened up ways of following molecular cascades in biology. Second obvious example, X-ray crystallography, really spawned the whole molecular approach to biology. But these huge movements happen when interdisciplinary boundaries are transgressed. And what's happening currently is, I think, the boundary is being dissolved again, helpfully, by the coming together over the last 20 years of what we call soft matter physics. So it's the statistical mechanics, it's the theoretical approach, lots of experimental fine microscopy scattering around the study of polymers, gels, self-assembled fluids, colloids as well. So the understanding that all these soft matter systems have something in common, and that biology has recruited them, and that therefore by bringing the understanding of the underlying physical laws into the biological systems, we can open up new questions. So I think that's what's happening in this particular stage. And in order to label it as a new stage, we aren't calling it biophysics or even biological physics, we're calling it the physics of life.
And what's the main aim? Is it to develop new medicines and new ways of diagnosing disease?
It's all of the above. You've asked me whether it's sort of applications driven. In fact, as my own career has progressed, I have to say that the boundary lines we draw between physics and biology have dissolved. The boundary lines we draw between the pure and applied have also become less and less meaningful to me. For example, trying to find out what happens in Alzheimer's disease has unearthed all sorts of fundamental questions about driven self-assembly, when things are in equilibrium, when things are not equilibrium, chaperones, how protein physics works. So we're open both to new biology and new medical solutions, but also to new physics, looking at the behavior of proteins inside cells and DNA bundling with proteins has, for example, opened up whole new vistas of electrostatics. I was told when I was at school that like charges repel. Well, it turns out that in biological media, like charges attract. That's new physics for you.
We're still in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. Is there anything that this kind of collaboration can do there too?
Oh, absolutely. There's been a huge willingness of physical scientists to ask the question, can my skills, can my research program help in any way with the way that we live with and move on through the pandemic at every level? I mentioned two levels. The Royal Society has coordinated a large effort of pandemic modeling. This is actually bringing in new ways of modeling data from other fields into handling models and data for the spread of the virus. That's at the highest level of coarse graining, if you like. Alongside that, we're looking at the dynamical structure of one of the proteins that the virus relies on, called the main protease, and it turns out to have a fascinating static structure on which is based a dynamic structure from which one can guide the construction of new drugs to interrupt the function of that process in the viral chain.
If there are people listening who want to get involved with the network, how can they get in touch?
If you're a physical scientist or a life scientist and you are interested in working in this interface, just apply. Just Google Physics of Life, you will find the webpage. It's easy to navigate to the place where you download a very small form if you want to apply for funds to running workshops, supporting perhaps vacation students, doing little preliminary pieces of work. We can help you run online or when that it becomes possible, workshops in preparation of major grants, all sorts of things we can do. And we're going to run summer school for early career researchers too. Or if you're not quite sure how to do that, get in touch anyway, say what you're interested in, and we can help put you in touch with the right people.
Thank you to Tom McLeish for describing the Physics of Life project to reporter Colin Stewart. We will, of course, link to the website so that you can find out more about the funding and networking opportunities on offer on our podcast page, fqxi.org/community/podcast. So, you know, Katie, this was very much kind of focused on the UK, but from a kind of global perspective, you're based in the United States. How important do you think these kind of interdisciplinary collaborations are between physics and biology or other subjects? You know, have you ever looked to other disciplines for inspiration for your own research?
You know, I think that more and more interdisciplinarity is becoming very important in research. In my own area, the most interdisciplinary I tend to get is between astronomy and theoretical physics. And even that is, you can have some pretty big gulfs between those communities, between observational astronomy and theoretical physics, and just figuring out how to speak the same language or translate between the two can be a significant challenge. But I think that connecting other fields with physics or chemistry or quantum theory or whatever, like there are a lot of places where there are really interesting questions right on the boundary, and a lot of places where you really need to probe those boundaries to get to the fundamental workings. I mean, Physics of Life is a great example because there's a lot that goes on that we're starting to understand about how life works that does rely on some really deep physics. And I know a number of people who work in biophysics who study, you know, the mechanics of cell division and things like that, where there's a lot of really important physics that you have to understand about the materials, about the energy transfer and so on. And having those conversations, having that interdisciplinarity is just really crucial for actually having a good understanding of what's going on. And I think it's great when people from different disciplines are able to talk to each other and share ideas and maybe, you know, as you say, get inspired by what they're studying and how there are analogs in different areas.
So I'm picturing the physicists amongst our listeners nodding their heads when you say there's a big gulf between theoretical physics and astrophysics.
Yeah.
For sort of non-physicists and non-scientists, it's probably comforting to know that physicists themselves want translation between different subfields of physics.
Yeah.
Well, that's a nice place to leave it before the quantum bubble of death comes for us. So I will say thank you to all of our contributors today, Franco Norrie and Colin Stewart, Janan Ismail and John Farrell, Tom McLeish, and of course, huge thanks to Katie Mack for co-hosting with me today.
Thanks so much for having me on. It's been a real pleasure.